Tanse, hello and welcome. You're listening to the voices of our people on the Windspeaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Trombley, Nitsi got sued, and on today's show, I'm honored to speak with Dakota House from Manny, Alberta. Dakota, welcome to the show.
Hey, right on, brother. Thank you so much. It's an absolute honor to be able to come on, and you know what? My mom and myself, even at times, have played bingo through, and just love supporting and being part of. So thank you so much for having me on.
And it's a huge honor as well for myself to have you on. And we're going to be talking a lot about who you are, Dakota, where you come from, and all that jazz. Well, let's get things underway. Let's get to the brass tacks. So talk about your younger life growing up as a kid. It's who were some of your role models growing up to help shape you into the person that you are today?
Oh boy! Well, as a kid growing up, I have really two role models. One was my mom, and the other is Bruce Lee.
Hey, there you go.
I got into martial arts. I started martial arts at a very young age. So Bruce Lee's philosophies and his teachings, even through the shows that I was watching, I mean, really, really got me involved. My mom, of course, and my grandfather, my Mursham, he was my other role model. So I had a few role models as a kid growing up, and I played sports all throughout my young years, soccer. I got to play hockey with the old Oilers back in the day when they were the Stanley Cup champs.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I know, it was amazing. I mean, back in the day, of course, with the racism and discrimination that we all faced and stuff, kind of grew up with a chip on my shoulder. I grew up in the inner city, and, you know, it was a lot of adversity. By the time I was in grade 4, I was voted least likely to succeed, and not in my class, but my entire school. Right. So it was the work that I put in and just really put my nose to the grindstone. And, you know, I was not going to be what they said I was going to be. You know, they said I was going to be a product of my environment. And I did. I did grow up in the inner city. Of course, coming from a small community up north, I sort of had the best of both worlds. You know, my mushroom always taking me out into the bush, and I learned how to hunt and trap and, you know, to shoot and all of that stuff. And before I got into the film industry, I was actually going to join the Army because I had a background in martial arts, and I was a good hunter. I knew my way around the bush and really good with the guns. So, yeah, but instead of dropping bombs of destruction, I drop bombs of motivation and inspiration now.
Hey, tap way. And of course, you know, with going back to what you said, you know, that you faced a lot of adversity growing up and you almost went against the grain, as they say. So can you talk a little bit about that and some of the things that you experienced, you know, growing up, like, you know, because it's different times then than it is now. But if you'd like to share a little bit about that.
Well, you know, by the time I was in grade 4, I was voted, like I said, least likely to succeed. And that wasn't in my classroom. That was the entire school. So I was the kid that everyone thought I was going to be the failure. And turns out I turned out to be one of the most successful kids that the school ever saw. Not only that, the neighborhood, right? So there was also the, racial profiling with the police, city police. You know, even when I got into the film industry, early into the film industry, I think I was about 19 years old or something, I got jumped. I got jumped by 4 or 5Edmonton police officers when I was running home from the store. So being Indigenous, running home from the store, you know, I was automatically guilty of something. But with that racial profiling, yes, I got jumped by... These officers, and which I turned around and I sued them. I sued them and I won. So anyone out there, you know what, police do not have the right to do that stuff to you. And if you feel like you've been, you know, if the law has been broken on your circumstance, then reach out and, you know, you can do something about it. Well, with that being said, you know, it's just... I wasn't going to be the kid who, you know, took stuff sitting down. And I always was up for the challenge. And, you know, with and it's sad to say, but, you know, the color of my skin and hair and stuff, there was always that, people giving you that, that tilted head look, like, should we give this guy a chance, or being followed around in a store, or, you know, of course that led me to getting into, when I was, still in my teens, getting involved in some gang life. And, you know, by the time I was 16 years old, I was incarcerated twice. So, you know, there was, I guess when you connect the dots, you look at the adversity that you go through and the circumstances, and, you know, it starts gravitating you towards one area. But you know, after I experienced EYOC, Edmonton Young Offender Center, that really turned my life around, because I wasn't going to be, under the thumb of the judicial system, which needs a lot of work, I must say, but I wasn't going to be under the thumb or the heel of and having to answer to. So yeah, I started doing odd jobs and, construction. I worked at a gas station, a car wash, and just so many things. I was always on the hustle in a good way to make a buck. Of course, we didn't, like most people, you know, we struggle, and living in the city, and the struggle was real. My mom was a single parent. She was raising myself. I'm the oldest of three. And, yeah, so going through all of that, I guess the words of wisdom that I could add to that is, you know what, we all stumble, we all struggle, and it's how you get up and keep moving forward. So by falling forward, you see where you're landing, you look at some of the mistakes that you've made, and you're able to change them. So I guess with that being said, it's like, you know, we all go through it, and life is what you make it, not what it makes you. Those are some of the words that I say, and also positive affirmations. You know, it's like sometimes it's a matter of how we look at things, right? In perspective. You know, we could say, you know, but I live in the middle of nowhere. I live in the worst of the worst. But you live in the center of everywhere, and life is what you make it, not what it makes you. So when you look at my story and everything that I grew up, I mean, I grew up a half a block off Skid Row, you know, and I went to school all throughout the inner city. There was definitely a lot of challenges throughout my young life. I mean, I still feel young. I still feel like I'm a kid, you know, and I don't look my age. So that's great, being 19 years of my sobriety. But you know what? There's a lot of peer pressure that's out there, and you know the gangs and the social media and everything that we're facing today is, you know, it's a program. It's isolation, segregation, separation, assimilation, colonization. And once you're part of it, it's pretty tough to get out. But if you have someone that you could look up to, and someone who has been through the gambit, someone who has faced these struggles in their life, and you know, worked super hard to get out of it, and you know, when you work hard, you really respect what you have, and you keep working hard. You know, and I can't stress enough, and I'll keep going back to it, and it's because life is what you make it, and not what it makes you. You know, so when we say, yeah, but I live over here, or I live this, and I'm so far from everywhere, you know, every step that you take in life, everything that you go through in your young life is teachings and knowledge to help you to be your guidebook to get you through and to help you. And then by listening to other people who have gone through similar experiences, you know, those experiences help other people to get to where they need to be. So I think when we shake off the program, you know, we're really able to see that we're being force-fed information, subjected information on a daily basis. You know what? It's not like when I was a kid or when you were a kid or a lot of us were kids when there was no cell phones, when there was no computer, when there was no, you know, running water. It's like, I think going through, looking back and looking at all the, you know, the hardships that I went through, and not only that, the adversity, it really is a staple in letting people know that, especially our future generation, our future leaders of today and tomorrow, you know, without them, there is nothing. And it's so important that they know that, you know, there's someone who is just like them, someone who comes from a small community, someone maybe who grew up in the city, someone who went through so much adversity in their life, and being Indigenous and was able to navigate and to make it through.
That was Dakota House for Manny, Alberta. You're listening to the voices of our people on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Tremblay. Next, I continue my conversation with Calgary's own Harold Horsfall. When you see her and many other, you know, people within the city of Calgary body as well to show their support in regards to, like, the red dress events and the orange shirt yep. days and stuff like that, like, because years ago this never happened and now it's yep. happening. Like, what does that mean to you in a sense when you see stuff like that?
Oh, that's well, organizationally, even like if you look at any organization, when leadership from the top down, you know, when they support things like that, it gives everyone underneath the permission space to be able to go into that and into those areas. And my approach to Indigenous relations is like, honestly, is like, this is all frontier. None of us have ever been this far before. So, you know, and it's just, again, just mentioning it, just trying to create as much progress as we can for the next generation. So I think that when you have leadership support like that, from Mayor Gondek, from any other leader that in any organization, that leadership support is critical. It is crucial. And to also support the people that are out there advocating and the people that are advocating based on their lived experience. And they're also educated. I mean, that's a wicked combination, right? When you get leadership support, educated, driven people, and people advocating, and what makes it even the best combination is when they're doing it all in a good way.
Now, of course, I have to ask Harold to pick your brain. When you go to a powwow or a round dance, what's your go-to, like, the first thing you want to eat at a powwow? What would it be? Would it be Bannock Burgers, Fritos, Bannock?
Oh, all of the above. But I'm kind of a recluse. I don't get out a lot. But, yeah, when I do go out, yeah, I love food. Well, I'm a carnivore. So if there's a good amount of meat, that's where you'll find me. Meat and fruit, really, primarily.
And of course, you know, you mentioned that you have little ones, right? So when you brought them, you know, to a lot of the events, the cultural events and stuff like that, and showing them, like, hey, like, you know, this is powwow dancing, this is, you know, the traditional grass dance, this is, you know, the sun dance and everything else, like, what was their first reactions when they got to see stuff like that for the first time?
Oh, my son Ray, he's right into it. He was on, he does a grass dance whole fit, and he's right into it, and he's even going to jump on the bus and go all the way over if none of us could bring him to a foul. So we're like, yes, that's awesome. That's really good. But yeah, again, like for me, like we're at the perspective where I'm coming from, it's always the most important to know yourself. You know, and all of these external things are all critical, and it's really good to be able to relate to community and whatnot. But yeah, for myself, it's always about focusing on yourself and hearing your own inner voice. And that's the biggest driver, in my opinion. But yeah, it's the best to be out there with your community, people who look like you, talk like you, think like you, and are probably related to you. in some way, shape, or form.
That's fair. That's fair. And it's also important as well, like you mentioned, because it helps you to shape you into the person that you become in this world. And you can't live this life alone, as the old saying goes. And of course, you know, sure. I have to ask, Harold, you know, with your son being a grassroots dancer, and when he approached you and said, "Dad, I want to do this," like, how did you react in that moment? Because if that was me, I would be so happy, because I begged my mom. I was like, "Can I be a dancer?" And she's like, "God, tap way." She goes, "Yeah, sure. If you got the money to pay for the regalia," she said. I said, "Oh, well," I was only like 10 years old. I was like, "What?" I thought like Cook'em could make it, right? So I didn't know that beads and stuff costed that much money, but it's expensive. But like, when your son approached you, in that instance, like, what did you feel as a father to go, "Wow, like, my son's going to be dancing in the powwows and doing competitions as well, possibly?"
Oh, for sure, yeah. I think it's always good. That's always the best, because, like, if you hear about, maybe let's pick on hockey kids, right? So some kids, like, they're not really interested in the hockey, but hockey might be really important for the parents, but the parents don't know that, and they think their kids should just do it. You know, that's it right there. It's like, you know, when kids come forward and they say they want to do things, it's always best to support them in that. That's the best parental advice that I have. Is that just listen to what the kids want and help them to get what they want.
Now, we are also in the month of National Indigenous Peoples Day and month, of course, within the month of June. What does National Indigenous Peoples Day mean to you?
Oh, when I was a kid, my mom would always say, like, she'd get me all excited that it was the longest day of the year, and I'd get to go in a tent and sleep in the backyard, and that the sun would be up for so long. And that's one of my fondest childhood memories, actually. She'd get me all hype, all excited, and be like, "Yeah, it's the longest day of the year. It's the longest day of the year." So for me, that's what it's always been about, is that the sun will be up and be there for the longest day of the year.
And that's honestly, like, and plus, people have said to me, is like, "Oh, it's a good day to have a day off."
That too. Well, so, a day off means a day away from work, which means a day for yourself, which is the best thing.
Tap way. And of course, I have to ask as well, Harold, with your time that you've been within the Indigenous Relations Office, you know, from the things that you've done, what are some moments that made you go, "Wow, like, this is where I am in life. I'm making a difference"? Like, in that instance, what are some highlights of your career thus far within the 5-year tenure that you've been within the relations office that stand out to you, that go, "This is, like, I can't believe this is my life right now"?
First jobs was under with Mayor Nehed Nenshi in that the Reconciliation Bridge. And then I was asked, because technically at the time I was still seconded to the Indigenous Relations Office. The fire department lent me to the Indigenous Relations Office that was forming at the time, because we were officially created in 2020, and 2018 is when the Reconciliation Bridge ceremony was, and I got to MC that, and that was like the biggest wow, because that was the first major thing that I ever MC'd, and my first real major public appearance on behalf of the city, and that was the biggest wow moment for me. And then I was able to take part of such a historic event for Calgary.
And of course, you know, I have to ask as well, you know, when you're seeing, events that are happening within, say, for example, like with Windspeaker with us, we did a first ever Indigenous celebration game with the Edmonton Elks, where we broadcasted the game in Cree and in Blackfoot. Now, when you see stuff like that happening, are you hoping to see that possibly, like, with the help of you, with Windspeaker leaning to the Stampeders side and saying, "Hey, let's do an Indigenous celebration game for the Stampeders and for the Flames and for, and for the other organizations that are in there"?
Oh, for sure. I kind of caught every second or third word. I think our reception getting out, but yeah, it would be awesome to have could benefit to speak the languages fluency. So I know some words, but you know, it would be really helpful for me so that I could learn a lot more of the language. And the more that you hear it, the more that you speak it, the better you get. And I think if I spoke it now, I'd probably sound like a kindergartner.
Hey, I'm still learning Cree as I go. And the beauty thing of the times that we're in, you know, we have applications now, we have books, we have audiobooks as well, and even like, you know, YouTube videos as well. And I was speaking to Wayne Jackson, a good buddy of mine. He's the elder here within the city of Edmonton. And I remember I asked him, I said, Wayne, I said, how can I learn the language? And he goes, well, either you go to, you know, go sit down and have some tea and coffee with some elders and surround yourself and learn face to face, or there's applications as well. But what blew me away was that Wayne Jackson, amongst many other elders, did Robert Munch-like books that were illustrated like in the Robert Munch style in Cree and in different languages for Blackfoot, Dene, and all that stuff. And, you know, when you see stuff like that, especially with you having a grandchild and some children of your own, like to have those kind of books at the ready for parents like that, what does that make you feel when you see stuff like that?
Oh, that'd be awesome. I think that's great. And actually, one of the project ideas that I have kind of floating around in my head right now is translating quite a few books or works into Cree, and that would be one of the ways that I'd want to learn to really further my own language skills. Because what's interesting for me is that from my perspective, whenever we use language, we're always talking about something, and the way that we talk about it is in a language, but there's still that actual something. So like there's something objective to what it is that we're talking about. And so for me, what's interesting is just seeing the different approach in how we learn it. Actually, there's a guy on TikTok who I follow, December's Wolf. I think that's his username, but he does Cree lessons on there, and it's awesome. And he's a young guy, and he's really fluent, and he just explains, like, even Otsipewan. He was saying that it's reference to the parkas that Chipewan or Dene people would wear, the pointy hat at this, and that's the name that Cree people had, and it was just because of their pointed hat. And even then, right there for me, that says a lot. It's like, well, when you learn Indigenous language, it's really practical. It's just about what you see, and so that's the refreshing part, and that's the part where I find that there's learnings, and that you can see that because, like, I grew up speaking English in the city of Calgary, right? But in an Indigenous family, and so like I still see the world, but then through that kind of view, because you can't help but be who you are. Your cultural values and the environment you are going to shape who you are. And it's just neat to see like that part, and I can trace. Oh, okay, so that's where a lot of that comes from, and that's what it means to speak Cree or to speak Soto or to speak even Blackfoot, any of the Indigenous languages. And I think that's an important part, like, for the future, because, well, my personal feeling is that we need to be less focused on who we are as our respective nations. But people say it's pan-Indigenous. I don't think it is, because even if you think of, like, MMA, you look at mixed martial arts, you actually... if you want to compete in mixed martial arts, you better be good at boxing.
That's true.
Be good at wrestling. You better be good at Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And Brazilian jiu-jitsu, even jiu-jitsu is Japanese. And then Brazilian is like, that's how the Brazilians, their take onto it. So you learn these things. And all of each of those techniques, the technique is what becomes more important. So, like, because then there are videos out there on YouTube of more traditional, quote-unquote, martial arts, and they might be more arts than martial, and you know, going against, like, a mixed martial artist, and in the format that a mixed martial artist is used to fighting in a cage with rules and whatnot, you know, like, that person's probably going to take your head off. So it makes you more powerful, as opposed to being watered down. I know that there's some people say it's watered down, but, you know, it's just about learning good technique and the application of that technique, and then your value system. So it's a lot more complicated, and I hope that with my work, I guess, if we're going to go anything into the future, is that to create an environment more where we can work together better, no matter what nation we're from. And so I don't think that's pan-Indigenous. I think that's actually being Indigenous in learning to be in our environment and to be masters of our environment, but with full respect and of the reciprocity that we have with our environment.
And speaking of the environment as well, you know, I there was a elder that I spoke to from the city of Calgary. I'm just trying to remember his name. I think it was Francis Whiskey Jack or Elder Dr. Reg Croshew. And I mentioned to them, I said, I had a vision or I had an idea in a sense that, you know, because they were talking to me about the importance of the Bow Valley River and the downside of, not the downside, but the downer area, like the woodland area within the city, and that how the streams of the water would be used for healing. And then that the herbs and everything else, like the plants that were used there were for medicines and stuff like that. And I thought to myself, I said, man, like, you know, once these elders are gone, how can we still pass on this knowledge, would say, you know, this is what the water was meant for. This is what everything else that is surrounded by you and what was celebrated on this land. And I thought to myself, I said, what if people, like, what if the city of Calgary created, like, these signs that if you scan the QR code and when you scan it on your phone, will pop up an Indigenous elder who, you know, could be Dr. Reg Croshew, could be Francis Whiskey Jack, it could be whoever from the city of Calgary, saying, you know, in the language, and then saying, you know, where you're standing is, you know, you see this, and they explain it within the traditions. I don't know, it's just a thought. Maybe I can throw that to the Indigenous Relations Office, but... but it's honestly, and it's stuff like that that when I see in my line of work, that just brings a smile once again to my face. And I have to ask you before I let you go, Harold, if there's one thing that you could do, or many things that you want to do and accomplish before your time is done within the Indigenous Relations Office, what would some of those things be?
Oh, geez. Where to begin? But I don't think it's so much the role that I have within the Indigenous Relations Office, because I'm still going to be me. I could be like on the street without anything and I'll still be me and I'll still be trying to do things and accomplish things, because for me it's about growing who I am inside. So that's always the most important, and I'm thankful that I have the venue and the support that I do within the city of Calgary and the Indigenous Relations Office, and I'm very thankful for that. I feel very blessed. And I don't have anything in particular. I just kind of go with my heart and I just kind of try to pay attention to what I see around me. And I just want to keep working for the betterment of our community and our betterment of our community as we are members of and citizens of this city of Calgary.
That was Harold Horsfall from Calgary, Alberta on Voices of Our People. I'd like to thank today's special guests for joining us, Dakota House and Harold Horsfall. Tune in next Thursday for more Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network.